Okay, so I'm here with Bob and Laverna Miller, who are the current owners of the Arctic Circle Hot Springs Resort. And I'm in their home in Fairbanks with Varpu. And my name is Laurel Tyrell, and it is the 15th of July, 2010. I get all that? So Bob was just telling us a story about working at on Deadwood Creek, correct? So, do you remember what year that was?
1938.
And was that the first time you came to the Circle Mining District?
No. Yes, it is the first time I came to the district. Worked in the mining outfit up in Deadwood Creek for two summers, 1938 and 1939.
And what did you do?
I was running a bulldozer, a mining outfit. They wanted to make a boss out of me right away for $500 a month, and I said, why should I work for you for $500 a month as a boss when I'm getting $1,100 a month for running the bulldozer? And they said, oh, the prestige. Well, you know what I told them to do with the prestige. And people are that way. Mm-hmm. Not me.
So where were you born?
Right here in Fairbanks. I've never had enough money to leave.
And that was the first time you were in Central, was in 1938. And how about you?
I was up there before, that is, but not working up there. I worked in Flat, Alaska for 2 years before that, as soon as I graduated from high school in 1935. Worked down there for 2 years, and then I came up and then worked over in Deadwood for 2 years. That's how I got up in there. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, one of the men that owned the outfit down in Flat, he was a partner with the people up in Deadwood Creek, and Miskovich was his name. That's the reason I went up to. Instead of going back to Flat, I went up to Central and worked for them there.
So if you grew up here, were your parents from here too?
My parents came up here in 1907.
And how old were you at the time?
Well, I was born in 1917.
1917, so you weren't born yet.
93 in October.
In October. And how about you, Laverna?
I came up in 73.
1973?
To Alaska. Mm-hmm. And then I got acquainted with the Springs after I married him. And we've been married 20 years now.
How did you meet him?
Where I was working over here at Jeffries. Remember Jeffries?
I do remember Jeffries.
Yes, sir. He came in at...
Was he a coffee?
He sat on the stool there, and I wouldn't give him the time of day, and then he'd stomp out, get mad, and he'd come back. He came back. I wasn't even aware who he was. One of the hostesses said, "That Bobby Miller's interested in you." And I said, "Who?" I knew who Bobby Miller was. "Everybody knows Bobby Miller. You know Bobby Miller?" I said, "No, I didn't know Bobby Miller." That was funny. Anyway, that's how that all started.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cute.
To me, work always came first, always. I went with one of the best-looking women in North America here for a couple of years, but I made up my mind I was never going to get real interested in her because I figured she was too good for me. Of course, I was wrong, really. I found that out, but I was wrong a couple of years. But that was the end of that.
When did you become interested in the hot springs?
It's when I worked up in Deadwood in 1938, and we were 15 miles away from the Circle Hot Springs up on Deadwood Creek Mining, but we went over to Circle Hot Springs every night, 7 nights a week, when I was working up there at Deadwood Creek.
How long did it take to get there?
From Deadwood?
From Deadwood. in those days?
It would take about a half an hour. But Circle Hot Springs was a booming place at that time. All the cabins were filled with people, families, and that's why I bought it. It was such a nice place.
So every night you'd get down there and would you go swimming?
I never learned to swim. I'm afraid of water.
He's never been in the pool.
Oh, he's never.
See, that's why I don't take a bath.
You just go down there for the social angle then. Mm-hmm. And, so what year did you buy the springs?
It was May of 1980. Mm-hmm. The last of May, 25th of May.
What kind of people were staying at the hot springs at the time?
Pardon?
What kind of people? Like, were there miners, everyone, or tourists?
It was nothing but gold mining on the Fairbanks. Mm. There were 87 mines around that area for 25, 30 miles around it. That's all there was in the interior was gold mining. When I was a kid, 10, 11, 12 years old, I was working over in Livengood, and that's quite a mining district there. Worked over there for 6 years. But that's all there was gold mining.
Did you say there was 87 mines? Was that when you were working on Deadwood or when you bought the springs?
Deadwood.
And Deadwood.
Uh-huh. All around the vicinity. Mm-hmm. See, the interior of Alaska, that's what built up Fairbanks was gold mining. Mm-hmm. That's all. If it wasn't for that, Fairbanks wouldn't be here.
So after you bought the springs in the 80s, you had a manager that you hired named Diane who refurbished the hotel. What was her name?
Merrill.
Diane Merrill. She refurbished.
Diane Merrill.
Right. She refurbished the hotel, and it was a...
See, what I did, I made up my mind that the best thing I could do to make money is I had to live in Fairbanks to buy all the supplies for the hot springs because I was always a good truck driver. I made 913 trips up there with trucks. Never had any trouble in my life. And that's quite a saving alone. Mm-hmm. And then I bought everything in Fairbanks, and I know how to buy. And I never missed a deal in my life. I bought cheaper than anybody. And I know how to do it. And it doesn't take much brains to figure it out, you know. But a lot of people don't figure it out. They just go, and if they want something, I'll buy it. They don't ask. Before I buy that, I say, how much is the cost of it? See, I always shop for lower prices. At first it took a little while, but after you got used to it, it was easy to do it. And I just saved a fortune in money by my system. And that's why I stayed in Fairbanks instead of out there. And then Diane Merrill, not much there. Something wrong with all of them. Had to get rid of them.
But they did do a nice job of refurbishing the hotel. And then, after them, if I remember correctly, came Bob LaRue and his wife, Loretta.
Loretta. Uh-huh.
And it was during a boom cycle of gold mining, so that it was quite active.
Very active.
There was an ice cream parlor, a general store, a gift shop, a laundromat, the bar, the hotel, mm-hmm. The pool, of course.
Yeah, it was was a busy place.
Mm-hmm. Ken, you were there for the miners' meeting or the miners' picnic one year. Can you describe that?
It was quite a gathering. There were cars parked a mile away along the highway. There were so many cars there. People came over. We always treated people real good. That was a ruling. Always treat the customer right. And it worked. A lot of people don't do that. Competition doesn't do it.
Oh, yes.
Makes quite a difference. We always had a real good reputation.
Mm-hmm.
But no angles, everything was done honestly. It paid off.
And then you started
in
97.
Mm-hmm.
And ran it for
2002. Mm-hmm.
And the Springs has been closed since then.
Yes.
Well, maybe you could tell us a little bit about the people you remember from, we could start with the time you were on Deadwood. Tell us about some of the characters that lived there at the time.
There were a lot of characters, many of them. Very interesting, too. Well, and when I was younger, and ever since I was, say, 10 years old, worked over in Limegood, that was a town that had characters. Everybody was an individual. Unbelievable. I remarked many times that if people in the States would be writing articles, if they knew about the people up here, they'd have come up and lived here. They could write article after article on individual people. And Alaskans have a tendency to be very independent, and rightfully so, to survive. But my life was a good example of what people did. And I worked 18 hours a day for over 75 years. I mean 18 hours too, and no, I hardly ever ate lunch. Didn't eat lunch at all. Just a cup of coffee and two pieces of toast for breakfast and nothing all day long. And then at nighttime though, I ate a heck of a big meal because I worked real hard all the time. Mm-hmm. Really did. Had a set pattern. But it's the reason I really worked so many long hours. I couldn't find enough good health. Because in order to run a business successfully, you got to have good health.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you're running a restaurant, if you have a bum cook, you're not going to have any customers eventually. So you have to do it right. And I was noted for that. And I had a reputation. If you're going to work for Miller, you better work. And that's why I had good people. And because they thought the same as I did.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them could have gone somewhere else and gotten more money, but they didn't. But they worked for me all day, because that's the way I had to do it ever since I was a kid, and it paid off. I never lost one day's work in my life, not in one day.
From illness?
No. See, I was fortunate enough not to be sick. I'm half sick now from this cold, but then that's all. But that didn't bother me. Kept working.
Well, I know that the people that worked with you still, the ones that still remain in Central, often come to see you and mm-hmm. often, you know, have remained friends.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I had a lot of good help from up there.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my help that I had problems with were out of the area, had alcohol problems or drug problems that had to go and come all the time. But the local people, I had good help from the local, thank goodness, from the local people. I was thankful for that. But I think when I was there, I think I think the mining had kind of declined from the time he's talking about till I went up there. There were some miners came and went, but when I was there, there were a lot of tourists and hostel people or groups that came in. State Farm always came out there, you know, Boy Scout came for whatever groups would come out. I think outweighed miners at that time.
Yeah, let's see if I have a picture here.
Declined for a while when I was there. But we were always busy. Always busy. We had, in the wintertime, remember, we had the Canadians come in there with their snow machines and what all. Every year. Japanese. They're interesting. They want to see the Northern Lights, and I'll never forget those young people. Are you acquainted with the Japanese and the Northern Lights at all? Yeah, they like to see the Northern Lights. And we had four flights of stairs there in the lodge. And these young girls in these groups would be upstairs on these different floors. And we always told the night watchman to be sure and let them know when the Northern Lights were out during the night. Wake them up. Go rap on their little door. They wanted to be woke up. We always ask them if they want to see them, and they say, yeah. I'll never forget it. They come running down those stairs like they're going to trip over each other. They were so excited to get out there and see those Northern Lights. It was scary. They didn't walk down them. They almost flew.
See, there's a picture. There, and then here's another picture. This is the lodge. It's sitting right where my hand is, and there's Joe Vogler and me, and then a bunch of people on a picnic up there.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of them.
Right, it's possible that was a miner's picnic, but...
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think there's one picture that's... I don't know if it's still in the hotel or not, that was you and Harry Hughes.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah.
It could have been Joe Vogler.
Yeah.
And someone else at the... at a miner's picnic.
Did you know Joe very well?
I knew him some. Would you like to tell us some about Joe?
A very unusual person, very smart, but down to earth. And he didn't mince any words, neither.
Mm-hmm.
If you were no good, he'd use some rough language telling you what you are. And I'm the same way, usually.
He had a mining claim on at Woodchopper, and also one up Ketchum Creek Road, which is right next to where I live. And he had a cabin up in there. But I used to pick blueberries, and so he would always allow us to go down to the creek on his mine and pick all his blueberries. So. And how about Harry?
Very unusual character. 110% honest. He was that kind of fellow. He left home back there. He right since he was a young guy, because he'd make money whatever he was doing, working, and then his father would take everything away. So he says, "The heck with that." So he left home. That's why he came up here. But very, very independent. And I seem to be attracted to those people because they were pretty much outspoken where I never was. I'm more the quiet type, but I'm basically the same. But when I'd ask for a job, I'd say, can I have a job? And if I wouldn't impress anybody. You give me the job, though, in the... Within a week, you gave me a promotion right away, too. I worked, and I knew what I was doing. No talking and put out, producing. I was that way all my life. And I got nothing but promotions, and I had many offers and everything else. But then the time came when they offered me more money if I'd be a boss. I said, I want to work for you for a boss for a lot less money. No. I says, I won't use the word that I used. The guy in town here that had the service. But anyway, he collected a lot of crap and everything. I said, if you give me a nickel an hour more for doing that, I'll do that too.
But you, we were thinking a little bit about Harry Hughes. Didn't you take care of him until he...
Yes. We took care of him here in town and had him in housing here for a while. And he was staying with some friends out of town a ways, but they didn't seem... wasn't happy there. And he wanted to move in, so we moved him into housing. And that was... he was there just a very short time. That was before... we took him out to the Springs, and our friends here in town wanted us to put him in the Pioneer Home, but he was not ready to go to the Pioneer Home. He was too physically and emotionally and mentally, he was too sharp to go to the Pioneer Home. He wasn't ready for it, so we took him out to the Springs. He was there for 5 years, lived in a little cabin next to the lodge. Walked over with his cane and ate his meals daily. And then we sent people over to him to be interviewed and take pictures. And he loved that.
Harry
He really loved the Springs out there. He was really kind of hurt when we closed it down.
He was noted all over as being a very honest person. They're originally going way back when they had the first bank in Fairbanks. Then they got another one soon thereafter. Both the banks gave him keys to their banks. And that's no bull. That's how honest he was.
And he lived to be how old?
107.
107. Mm-hmm. He was a, if I remember correctly, wasn't he a territorial
sheriff? He was a sheriff. Mm-hmm. And electrician, didn't he do electrical work? Had a little shop here in town.
Electrical
work. He loved to hunt.
His last days, he sat in the big chair right over there where that plant is. And no bother. Sat in the big chair just like that one. How long did you keep him here?
2 years.
I thought it was longer than that.
About 2 years. Maybe three, I don't know. The last year, he had to go to Denali. He had to have his catheter put in at that time. And that's when we went ahead and put him in Denali.
When the two banks, the Fairbanks, would give him the key to their bank, that tells you something.
Mm-hmm.
They
did
don't
he ever
give
have
the
an
keys
appetite?
To the bank, everybody.
He really had an appetite. I've never seen anybody at that age. He ate three square meals a day, you know, and he wasn't active. We put him in the Senior Olympics here in town. He loved that. He threw those things from the wheelchair, and he really ate that all up. It was really neat. He came home with all these little medals, you know. But, no, he ate really good. And when he was in Denali, he ate real good with us here. He ate good at the Springs. And then when he went to Denali, they'd feed him very good meals over there. He'd eat all of them while I was over there every day. Put him in the wheelchair, and I'd take him from the Denali Center over to the hospital cafeteria. About every other day, he'd have a piece of pie, ice cream, and French fries, and he would eat it all after he had his lunch. After he had all his lunch, we'd sit there for an hour. Well, he picked on everything and ate it, but he ate it.
When I knew him, he wasn't heavy at all.
No, he never was.
No.
Never was really heavy. But he had a good appetite. He didn't like carrots. He spit those in a little box. He didn't like anything but carrots.
He devoted
a lot of
his time.
He was easy to care for. He really was.
To just helping people. That's a free of charge. He built several cabins in Alaska scattered around the country. And he was well liked by everybody. Mm-hmm. Just because of his honesty. And there's no question about it.
Well, he used to... my kids remember him because he used to give out candy at the hot springs. You know, whenever you see a little kid, he'd give them candy. And I wouldn't let my kids have candy, so of course they'd go see Harry instead. I was also thinking about, you had talked about the way in which you did your buying, and we were benefits of some of that, because some of it would be used at the hot springs, in the kitchen, etc., and some of it would filter into the community. And I remember one winter that you had bought a great deal of cream. It was like whipping cream. And everybody learned to make all kinds of recipes with whipping cream because...
Came in plenty. Huh?
It came in plenty. And we were the beneficiaries of some of your buying. And bananas. One year it was bananas.
One year I can remember, just while you were talking there, bought, I think it was 82 turkeys. Just because turkeys. I bought them, I think, for 35 cents a pound. So we were eating turkeys for quite a while.
turkeys.
Our whole family here was brought up real tough. We were poor. We had a big garden every spring of the year and had vegetables all winter long. We kept them in a basement cool room. Then we had all the wild animals for meat, like moose. Most of them were meat. You also had caribou, but moose are a lot better than caribou. Even though you'd think they're out there living in the same place, the meat would be the same, but it isn't. There's a big difference in moose meat and caribou meat.
So you like moose meat better?
Oh yeah, very definitely.
Did you hunt yourself?
Pardon?
Did you hunt yourself, or did somebody bring you the meat?
I didn't get you.
Did you hunt yourself?
Or no, you know something? I'm glad you asked that. When I was about 10 years old, working out of Living Good, an old fellow and I walked across the hill one day out hunting. And I didn't know. I had a little 410. I haven't shot 50 shots in my life out of a gun. And here I was born here. But we were out hunting, and I had a little 410, a little short shotgun. There's some fool hens. We call them fool hens, but they're spruce grouse. Grouse. Up in the tree there, and I shot, and I killed it. And I felt so sorry for that little bird. I said, what did I do that for? I felt sorry for the bird.
So when you ate moose, how did you get the moose then?
Well, other people always killed the moose.
No, and then shared it with
like
you?
Like me, their animals would become up to your door.
So did they swap things with you, or did you buy the meat, or how did you end up with the meat?
Well, people would give it to other people, families. Mm-hmm. So somebody else would bring you a bunch of moose. In the earlier days, that's the way people did it. There'd be people out there living there, and it was easier for them to catch a moose, and then they'd bring it into Fairbanks. Like, they brought our family a lot, because there were 9 of us in the family, and they knew about it, and a small town and everything. So that's the way it was done, though. Everybody helped each other when I was young. And I did the same thing all the time, too. I felt sorry for my mother, because my father was mean. And she was just a wonderful person. And fortunately for me, and I was next to the youngest, but I was always out working. I always had some money. And I always took care of her, gave it to her. I spent a few a few hundred thousand on her, doing that for life. And then my 5 older sisters, they were real good people. Had the reputation, but we all had to get out and work, and we all did real well because of that. I had a brother 5 years old, and he went to the Naval Academy in Annapolis, and he turned out to be, he came out as a rear admiral after 34 years in the Navy. But he was the one that went. He was going to go into submarines, and I talked to him. I said, I don't like water, so you could never learn to swim. I said, you're not going to catch me a submarine. I said, get up in the air, fly. I says, if the engine quits, least you'll glide. You'll have a fighting chance. And he went into aviation after I told him that, and his record was wonderful. He was the one that trained all the Doolittle flyers off aircraft carriers. Hmm. And that's when he was young, when he first started as a lieutenant. But he had a good reputation all the time. But he had that work ethics, like mm-hmm. we did see. That's what did it. He always wrote a letter into my mother. He said, I worked 17 hours a day. Well, I beat him. I worked 18 hours a day. No bull, either.
Was there any one event that helped you to buy the hot springs, or?
No, I. When it was for sale, it took me 1 hour to buy it. I went up and looked at it to see if it was still there, because it was in there for 2 years in the summertime. I really liked the place. I never liked the city. Even Fairbanks, I saw very few summers in Fairbanks. I was always out in Livingston, or out in the sticks in the mining outfit, down Flat Alaska, and then over in the Circle District working in the mining outfit. I liked it out in the country. Didn't like the city life. And that's the way most people felt. There were a lot of people. Some of them were very smart people. They could have done a lot better if they'd have worked in the city. But they chose working out in the sticks because it's just something that's very, it kind of gets you in your blood.
So is it the independence of the lifestyle that's appealing?
That's right. You never catch me living in a big city, I'll tell you that, like New York. I've been to the States several times, spent 2 or 3 days there, and that was enough for me. I always called it a rat race. And that's all it is.
I'm looking at an album right now that Laverna gave us that's from when Harry Hughes' birthday. This is me that particular year.
See, up in Alaska, everybody seemed to be doing the same thing, independent, and everybody was striving to outdo everybody else. I'll never forget, in Fairbanks, we had an Italian, and a Finnish people, a Finn, and a Swede, and a Norwegian. Those four people, they had no education, but they built houses. I can take you around their houses right now and show you what they built. They each tried to outdo each other. They really did, see. But they did the best. And I've never forgotten that, and that was setting an example for everybody else. And my father always said, well, do it right or don't do it. And so he didn't. And I disliked him very much. So I didn't want him telling me twice. He just told me once, and that was enough. So that was a good education, too. But in later years, as time went on, he died in 1940, and then I had a lot of time to think, as time went on. And a few years ago, I told I had out of 9 of us, there were just 2 of us left. An older sister, she died about 8 months ago. But I said, put up a monument for him and I'll pay for it.
Was he someone from Central, too?
He was friends of Harry's for years. Mm-hmm.
Hard work at that time in mining claims, like mosquitoes and hot summers.
Mosquitoes is what I hated. Dirty little devils. They bite you and they sting. They'll hit you, and immediately they you feel it within a second or two when they're hungry.
Mm.
I didn't like those mosquito bites. That's the only thing I cursed in the summers in Alaska for is those mosquitoes. But for some reason or other, we haven't had mosquitoes for a long time.
I was going to ask you. That's exactly what I was going to ask you about.
The smoke. They don't like smoke.
You would say it's from the smoke from the fires?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's smoke. Right. Mm-hmm. That's what we're doing.
But we do have some bees this year, though. We had a lot of bees a couple of years ago, or three bad ones.
Were there mosquitoes even here in town?
Oh, yes, you betcha. Yeah, those bees were bad ones, too. Mm-hmm. They come periodically. Like a few years ago, every time I had that big equipment yard, we had 1,200 trucks in the yard. And every time I stick my neck in a cab of a truck, there are a bunch of bees in there. Why I didn't get stung, I'll never get, but I heard them buzzing around, so I got to hang out with them real quick. Like. But they were in all the trucks in our yard, and I had 1,200 trucks. Learn everything the hard way.
What else have you noticed about the weather that has changed? Anything else?
Yes, the weather's been getting warmer all the time since I was a kid, and I've always told people that because I worked outdoors all my life. And I had a policy, I work out in the wintertime to 40 below. And then when it got 40 below, then I look at the thermometer and I work outdoors till 40. And then I go inside and work, and then my brother always had a shop, and I go spend the rest of the time in the shop, and I never worked inside of a building in my life. It was always outdoors. As I say, that's why I've been pretty healthy all my life.
So you would say that it's warmer now?
Well, yeah, it's been definitely getting warmer all the time.
And we have wind now. We never had. When I came in 73, there was no wind. And I was from Windy Country. And I really enjoyed no wind. It's only just been the last few years we've had wind. Didn't used to ever be any wind here in town. Just now.
See, I knew more about the weather because I worked every day of my life in the outdoors. Mm-hmm. And I noticed it more than anybody, and I'd tell people, I said, I could tell year by year, getting a little warmer. And it did. We have it pretty easy now. When I say warm, all I do is 20 below, I dress up like I am now and have a warm jacket, and that was it, in 20 below zero. But I always said this, and you can always dress for colder weather, but you can't undress for warm weather. You just get down to the bare skin, and that's it.
How about the amount of snow? Do you think that's changed at all?
Very definitely. Uh-huh. They've been getting lesser snow every year. Other last winter was no snow at all to speak of. But when I was a kid, we had, I'll never forget the day I started kindergarten in Fairbanks. You know, you're excited going the first day of school and everything, but it was a foot and a half in snow, and it was about the 4th of September. A foot and a half of snow at that time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
That's all right. Yeah. Might pound some sense in my head.
You need to be sitting on the other chair.
Try a different chair.
No, I get it.
This
knee of mine has been on the bum, but it doesn't hurt. But if I work, it hurts. Mm-hmm. So as long as I...
Can we help you?
No.
You'll be okay. In the first place, I need to take that little old rocker out of here.
That thing's so slippery. There we are.
The pillow slipped out from under you, I think.
Yeah. Get that off of there. Yeah, that's right.
Well, we need to remove it so nobody else likes it either. Need to take some
out. See, sitting around and lying around, it doesn't hurt.
You'll go bye-bye.
This is wonderful.
Somebody else might slide out of there, too.
Yep. We were discussing the snow, the amount of snow.
Yeah, I notice the snow more than anybody because I said I worked all every day in the wintertime.
Can you tell a little bit about any time you came over the summit, Eagle Summit, when you were working at the hot springs? And
very definitely, you bet I can. I never forget one day coming. See, I knew the roads so well. I couldn't see in front of me. I'd look out the side, and of course you'd see the piles of snow where the grader had gone through. I'd be going along that, looking at that. I couldn't see anything in front of me going across Eagle Summit from mile and a half. But all of a sudden,
you think it was due to a whiteout? You mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, in the snow, actually snow and then whiteout combination going across the top of Eagle Summit. But I'll never forget, I was going across, and there was a snow plow. Of course, they're sitting up much higher than me in a pickup seat. And so the snow plow was coming this way. I was coming towards Fairbanks, and he went on, and I was going across there. I couldn't see anything, but I knew where the road was. And one day, as a matter of fact, the fellow right in front of me, I came along an hour or two later, something like that. The fellow got killed. He went over the bank. Real good guy, too, and good driver and all that, but I don't worry. But anyway, I had everything pretty well figured out.
Are you talking about the DOT man that went over, or a private citizen that went over?
Let's see. He was a DOT man.
Mm-hmm. Al.
FBI Al.
Mm-hmm.
Good guy, too, and a good driver, and everything about him. He's smart. He was no dummy. But he just got too... Well, when you're good at everything, you take chances. I'm good at driving, so when I'm driving down the road to the big truck and the road's narrow, I'm down there cleaning up the site and the boards down there, and I look ahead. You'll take a chance, see? But I did that hundreds of times. But I never had any trouble.
Going over.
You had to keep your mind on your work. Mm-hmm. It was interesting.
So you never got stuck up there?
I just, one night, I left here late in the afternoon and it was storming on the summit. And when I got to the springs, I said, get the truck unloaded. I ate. When I get there, other guys that unload the truck, see, while I did some eating.
Mm-hmm.
I said, get the thing unloaded quick because that summit's blowing up there. And I said, it's not going to be easy going back. So they unloaded it, and sure enough, going back, I had to buck snow drifts, and I had to get out and shovel a little bit once in a while. And I had, at that time, a big truck that had big wheels on it, and I could get through much better than normal. But I still had to do a little shovel. It was that bad. So I got across okay. And I got down at the bottom of Summit, the 101 mile. That's at this side. There's a 3-4 pickups going towards the springs. I said, you're not going to make it. I just wiggled through by the skin of my teeth. And anyway, they'll make it all right. Yeah. Maloney. That was about, say, 8 o'clock at night, roughly speaking. They didn't get it in the springs till 5 in the morning. They had a lot of trouble crossing the summit. But I only had to turn around 5 times in my life out of 913 trips. But I wiggled through a few times, so pretty close. I knew the road so well that I could tell when I was going to be at a certain milepost because I drove the same all the time. It kind of comes automatic to you. I drive fast, too.
He still knows where every incident happened on that road. Even if it's 2 years later, he remembers where it is. Something happened to me on there or somebody else. All looks the same to me. He knows exactly where it happened. On there. Tell them about your moose.
About the what?
Your moose escapade on there. Your three moose.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty psychic. I can't predict anything. It has to come to me here. It was on a Sunday, and Laverna was going out with a vehicle, and then I was had a load of freight, and I followed her. But I had a feeling that something was going to happen that day. Did I tell you about it when we started or not? I don't know. And it was a nice day, really. But I had that feeling. And sure enough, we got over there okay. But coming back, it was a beautiful day coming back, going along a long straight stretch. You can go 100 miles an hour, but now I'm going about 40, 45. Then you, for that long straight stretch, the other side of between 12 Mile Summit and Eagle Summit. And then I was going slower. I'm still kind of woozy. Came up around the corner, going about 40 miles an hour, came around the corner, there's three moose in crossways in the road. Sharp drop off there, and there's just a little ditch about that high over in this side. There was a moose in the ditch. There's another moose over here, and another moose over here, and there's about 2 or 3 feet there between the moose, and there's the edge of the, you know, big drop off over there. So, and it came upon me suddenly, and I've never had that happen before. I've had some close calls, but not that close. And I'm watching very closely. So I said, well, I hardly had time to react, really, but I'll never forget. I says, well, that moose is on the edge, and there's that 2 or 3 foot of space in there, and then there's the other two moose across the road. So I'm going to go in and hit that little space in there. And why, if the Lord couldn't have done it any better. I was just lucked out. Usually you smash up your whole front end, see? Mm-hmm. Anyway, because it came around, I didn't have time to stop, really. And anyways, it all ended up, I hit this moose, and he flipped in the air, and he fell over the bank way down there. And then this other moose over here hit the back end. I hit the back end of him, broke the window, and smashed in the back end of the van. And then it threw the van around that way. And then, but I had the wheels turning this way, so I don't want to go to the bank there. So I had enough sense and not to jerk it over, like a lot of people would. So I eased it over a little bit, and I ended up just crossways in the road, and about that far more, and I'd have been over the bank with that dead moose down there. But so that was a pretty close call. So there, I'm psychic.
Tell him the rest of the story.
Huh?
You're not through with the story yet. You were hanging over the embankment, remember?
Oh, yeah, and then mm-hmm. I said, well, now, and I had the brake on. I couldn't, if I'd let up on the brake, it'd have gone over. And anyways, I can't do that. I says, and it's getting late in the afternoon, and I said, well, I'm going to sit here with my foot on the brake if I have to stay there all night. And there's a great deal of traffic at that time, see, you know. On a speaker, and pretty quick along comes a guy, and he's a drunk. So I had my door open, and he was just sober enough to know a little bit. So I said, just hook the, there's a chain in the back end, grab the chain and hook it on there and pull me back. Just that far, do it, you see. So anyway, so then he dragged me down the road because he was drunk, and I said, well, you know, I think I'm going to go to the bank. He's going to pull me off. But fortunately, he had no sense to stop. And I had the engine running all the time and used it, and you couldn't see where the front end was damaged at all. I had a Dodge van at the time, a 15 passenger. So I said, you know, this Dodge has been kind of a jinx to me. I'm going to get rid of it. I sold it to the bartender that worked for us over at the hot springs. He hit a little tiny baby moose one day and smashed up the whole front end. And they kidded him over there. He said, well, how come Miller can hit three big moose, no damage? Here you hit that poor little baby moose, and you smashed up the whole front end.
Who was the bartender at the time? Do you remember?
Let me see. What was his name that had the bar?
Was it it wasn't Bob
might
LaRue?
Been, might no. have been Steve's dad, maybe. Steve, what was his last name? Steve. Remember, his dad ran the bar.
And his wife worked there as a waitress.
I can't remember
the name of it. I can see him sitting there right
Karen
now.
Karen and Scott.
Scott.
Scott and Karen Ratliff. Yeah. Could it have been?
I thought it was after that. It may have been. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was no laughing matter. And then he almost froze to death one night, or could have.
Huh?
I remember the time he left the Springs about 5. It usually takes about an hour to get up to the summit. And I usually hear from him when he gets to town, didn't hear anything. And I quit at midnight.
Yeah, I was coming back to town, but
he comes rapping on my door at midnight. And he looked like death warmed over.
I was real tired, so I had been up since 5 in the morning. This is 8, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, and working all day. I'm tired. I can drive. Driving is easy, but then you can't work, because you're too tired.
This was in the winter.
But then when I was trying to get up Eagle Summit coming into Fairbanks, and it was just too bad, and I shoveled a lot of snow, and finally, it was so slippery after you got through down to the road that and the road being what it was, it was, you had to be careful, real careful. So what I had to do was back down the hill, a mile and a half, and I followed the railing down along to watch where I was going. But then I turned around. There's a turnout down there, and I turned around, went back to Springs and stayed. I was pretty tired that night.
You shoveled with your hands. You were there about 5 hours.
Oh, yeah. And then when I took the van over,
yeah.
I have all the tools to work with, and those stupid jerks at the Springs that unloaded the van, they left my tools out at the Springs.
We didn't have a shovel.
And anyway, so had I used, this was a shovel, my hands.
Mm-hmm.
So from about 7 till midnight, then he come rolling back in. Tells you how long he was out there.
But see, that's good education.
What, to leave the tools in the vehicle, or
everything it happens. And you know something? I'm having the same troubles here all the time. Same sort of thing. And it's unbelievable. I come home, I lock the door, and if you come to the draw, say, what the hell do you want?
Everybody makes mistakes in town with everything anymore. Doesn't make any difference what it is.
I quit the Catholic Church in 1937 because, to me, a church is phony. I was an altar boy right over here at the Catholic Church. It's still there, this side of the bridge in town. But the only reason I did it was because of my mother, to satisfy her. But I got to thinking, and I said, no, this church isn't doing me any good. I says, I don't do anything wrong. Nothing. And I served on the altar. And one night, we were serving on the altar, and the guy in front of me had big flat feet, and he tipped over the incense burner standing in there, and it smashed down just like something. There was a big clang, and the old Father O'Reilly, there, he's kind of a slow guy. He looked around, and I was passing there where the thing fell down. He thought it was me. So the church was over in about 15, 20 minutes, and I always said he beat me up. Well, he didn't hurt me. I knew my mother, so if you had a good excuse for my mother, that'd be okay, but it had to be a good one. This is it. Went home, and I was half crying. I said, Ma, I says, Father Roddy beat me up, and I said, I'm not going back to church, back to serve an altar anymore. And that was okay then, see, she'd go for that if you had a good reason. But I had to laugh because I didn't believe it, and pretty quick, I was going to church, and when the first time when I was a real young guy, you go up the front row, and I'm looking around, meet a bunch of bums. So the next time I went in there, a week or so later, you'd sit three rows back and look around, a bunch of bums. And then, so sit three rows back, and the next time in three rows, and finally I was walking in the door back here, and there's all those pews up there, and they were ahead of all. I'd stand in against the wall there. And I looked around me one day, and there was a bunch of drunken bums on each side of me. I said, I've had all I want of this thing. It's just phony, that's all. But people feel better when they go to church. Well, I don't do anything wrong, so why should I go to church? I can't see where it'll do me any good. If I want to say a prayer, I can say it right here. But
So it's the organization of the church, not faith itself.
But I'm too realistic, in other words. To me, the church is nothing but a racket, and it's been proven time and time again. Of course, it's been much worse in later years. Read the paper all the time. Bunch of this. Naturally, there are some good ones. We know that. But there's too many bad ones, too. So to me, basically, I analyzed church and from the day it started. So I said, well, let's say it was 500 years ago. There are a bunch of these dummies sitting in the desert there, squatting like that, doing nothing. Well, there's always a smart, there's always a few smart people. So some of these few smart people, they knew it. So they're the ones that started talking. They talk to all these dummies sitting there, and that's how the church got started. Talking to a bunch of dummies and getting money from them.
See, well, I don't mean to change the subject on you, but I was wondering if you were around when the Battle of Weber Creek took place with Joe Vogler.
No, but I knew all about it. But that was another. I found out about it right away, and of course the hot springs are right close there.
Right, and he used the hot springs as a staging area when he left. And so I couldn't remember exactly what year that took place, but
I forget the year myself. I don't remember that.
Were you there when the Yukon Charlie was made?
Yukon Charlie?
The National Preserve?
I don't remember that.
Okay, well,
see, I was in Fairbanks all the time. I very seldom did I stay at the hot springs overnight. I'd always come back the same night.
Mm-hmm. So it was mostly you that stayed there for...
It kept me busy buying in Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm.
Hardly ever came to town.
So did you notice changes when the preserve was established at Yukon Charlie?
You were pretty busy running the springs.
Probably happened before my eyes.
Well, you were there, what did you say? From
5 years. Yeah.
Until 1992. So the Yukon Charlie was established before that.
Yeah. From 97 to 2002.
Yeah. So then, it was earlier.
We closed it October 16th in 2002.
So that's almost 8 years. Boy, that's gone by fast. Do you have any, are you hoping to sell it?
It'll be sold.
Pardon me?
It'll be sold. I know about selling better than anybody. And I had the reputation when I had the big yard, equipment yard in Fairbanks. The message around town is when you go to that yard, don't mess with Miller. Because I came out with the best deal I could, and that's it. And if you tried to get it for any less, I tell you, get the hell out of the yard. Pretty independent, but I had very little trouble.
Well, I'm hoping that, of course, it it sells.
People all over town still want to know when it's going to open up.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they ask you even now when they see you.
I have a very smart relation in Las Vegas, and he's not in the rackets at all. He's my my older sister's kid, Bob Berglund. Mm-hmm. But I always said he's the smartest man in the world that I know of. But he's just an unusual good guy, and he has a brother in Fairbanks that's a scoundrel, an older brother. I have no use for him whatsoever. But this Bob is his name, the one in Las Vegas. But he says, you know, Miller, if these people in Las Vegas knew about the springs they buy at the minute. He himself has done real well in Las Vegas, but he's in the car wash business. Hmm. He had a car wash in Park City, Utah, and in two places. And then the third one, in Anaheim, California, too. But he is a wheeling dealer, but very, very honest, a hard worker. And he's done real well making money, but he's still at it down there. I tried to keep him up here, but he said, no. He said, I'm going to make $1 million fast down in California. Well, he didn't make it as fast as he thought he would. But he got started down there, and he couldn't quit. It'd
be nice to have it thriving again, wouldn't it?
It would. I really miss the springs, you know. I've lived in Central for 31 or 32 years, and all that time we would go to the springs for, you know, bathing and swimming, and we taught the kids to swim there, and my kids really miss it too. And the people that, you know, came and went there too, so. I have some pickled pike from Luke for you in the car. So
keep on asking.
Don't let me forget to give that to you before I leave. Speaking of my kids.
Well, I know.
I had one son that worked for Laverna when she was there.
Holidays, filming.
Right, filming and
always dependable. Good work.
Cleaning the pool.
I'd be lost without him.
Bob Loretta and his wife Loretta, they were quite a pair. She was an angel, and I really liked her because she was a worker and just a good person. But he, when he gets drunk, he gets mean, and that was his bad
habit. And he ran the bar.
Yeah.
Bad combination.
But when he wasn't drunk, well, he was a pretty good guy. See, I leased the springs to them for 2 years once there.
How is Luke?
My son Luke is doing very well. He is here in Fairbanks,
there?
Yeah. And
how did she adjust to Fairbanks after being in Valdez all those years?
Fairbanks is okay. It's really not the place they want to live. But, you know, like Bobby said, you know, they're kind of country people. Uh-huh. And so they... I don't know where they'll end up, but or what they'll end up doing. But
that's hard when you have your education and everything. Mm-hmm. You have to go to those big cities in order to pursue what you've had your training for.
Have a job, right.
When they're used to the other, it's hard.
You know, another thing to prove a point about the people of Alaska. I'm trying to think of how many years ago, but anyway, our legislature in Alaska were all honest people. I knew many of them. 100% honest. Now, politicians are not honest, but they were. But I said, I predict that now there's a few scoundrels got in there. And I said, by next year, it's going to turn a little bit worse. I was wrong. It turned worse that year. And ever since then, it's been getting worse and worse, and that's why you have a bunch of crooks running the country. They're all on the payoff system. All of them. You gotta pay off somebody. I never paid off anybody a nickel in my life and never would. And I lost a lot of business sometimes because I didn't do it, but I said, that's all right.